October 30th, 2009. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Jeff Robbins back with Lullabot Drupal podcast number 79. We've done almost 80 of these. Well, the next one will be the 80th. We get together every couple of weeks, talk about Drupal, and here we are. I'm here today with
Angie Byron
and
Nate Howe
and
Karen Stevenson.
All Lullabot people today on the podcast talking about Drupal. Today we're going to talk about Drupal 7, the new release of Drupal, which should be out at some time. We'll talk about when later in the podcast. First, a little bit of news. We have the Do It With Drupal seminar in December, December 9th, 10th, and 11th in New Orleans. We did the Do It With Drupal seminar last year, and it was a great success, and we're doing it again this year. You can find out more information about that at doitwithdrupal.com. We've got Dries Boytart, the founder and lead of the Drupal project, is giving a keynote. We've just announced our second keynote is Christina Halverson, who is the author of Content Strategy for the Web. One of the nice things about Do It With Drupal is we try and bring in non-Drupal people to talk about a lot of the stuff that Drupal people need in order to build successful websites, whether that's understanding community and building community, or in this case, talking a lot about content. I think at these conferences a lot, we talk about how the technology behind how to build Drupal sites and that kind of thing. And we've certainly got a lot of that. But Christina's going to come and talk about content and sort of coming up with a strategy for your content on the site and how that'll work. And she's a very compelling speaker. And we've got her coming. So it looks to be another really great event, and you can find out all about it. Doitwithdrupal.com. There's an early bird rate right now through November 1st, which is just a couple days from now. So if you're listening to this podcast right when it comes out, hurry on over and register. What else do we have in the news here? New DVD. Site Building with Drupal is the latest Lullabot video download and DVD. It's our, what are we calling it? Our magnum opus. it's our big, it's almost 5 hours long.
Double disc.
Highly. It's very, very dense. We do these things that's sort of a screencast, but it's really highly edited, and you can actually see our faces too and stuff like that. So, it's 4 hours and 45 minutes. There's a lot of stuff on there. And it's kind of the definitive guide to building sites with Drupal. You can find that video and all of the Lullabot Learning Series videos at store.lullabot.com. And the site building video is a early release right now, so it's a discount price. So come and get it while it's fresh. Other Drupal news this week, big news, presidential news. This week it was announced that the whitehouse.gov is a Drupal site now. It wasn't even announced ahead of time that it was going to become a Drupal site. It just last Sunday, it just launched and was Drupal. And that's really exciting for us in Drupal. I wrote an article on lullabot.com a few weeks ago about how government was starting to use Drupal. There was a lot of use of Drupal by government-related entities, sort of like NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and it was used a lot in presidential campaigns and other campaigns along those lines. But it really hadn't kind of broken through in government yet. But this is a big. I would use the word coup, but that doesn't seem to be appropriate. it's a big win for Drupal. It's also really interesting. Tim O'Reilly also wrote an article about the White House adopting Drupal and what that means for open source. It's an interesting and promising move for such a prominent branch of the U.S. government to be moving to open source, and it's also created some discussion on the web about whether this is a good idea or not. I guess we're sort of the Drupal opinion over here. I don't know. What do you guys think about all this criticism that we've been seeing?
Completely unbased.
Well, let's quickly sort of outline. There were a couple of articles that got posted. I mean, so first of all, there was a lot of press about the White House moving to Drupal, which is great. A lot of Drupal in the news. And then almost sort of as a rebuttal, we saw a couple of articles, in particular one on Slate.com. Boy, it's not easy to find this one. If you go to www.slate.com/ID/223-3719, there's an article by
someone ought to be using Drupal for their clean URLs, I tell you.
Exactly. If they were using Drupal, we could eat more easily tell you what the URL was. A guy named Chris Wilson posted kind of mostly bizarre sort of a rant. I'm inclined to criticize Drupal kind of as much as anyone. But I don't know, this was weird. And there's like a few selected comments down the bottom, but if you click to reply, click here, you can actually see there's about like 800 responses from people basically saying, what are you on, crack?
Yeah, I think actually the comments are the best indicator of people's reaction to the White House moving to Drupal, because they're all like, Drupal is awesome, this is great. And so I think that's actually like the true indicator of like people's reaction to this change.
What concessions can we give to these arguments? I mean, there's talk about the security of open source. I mean, people being able to download Drupal and try and hack at it themselves locally. They're not making themselves known that they're trying to hack the site. And then if they were to find a vulnerability, then they could go out and kind of go in more stealthily.
I think there's some merit to that, but you know, there was another article on hackers.org or some ha.seekers or something. There's a link in the podcast, but anyway, there was a note by a penetration testing guy who sort of outlined that, you know, now that you've done this, what I can do is take a copy of Drupal and just fire anything I want to at it, and you know, ta-da, I can find a vulnerability. But the thing is, so can the good guys. You know what I mean? It's like, I think, you know, he tries to make the argument that an open source, program is inherently more insecure than a closed source one, because, that anybody can look at the code. But it's like, but yes, that's why it's good, because anyone can look at the code. And, you know, we get new security reports coming in about contributed modules and stuff like that all the time in the security list. And this is a good thing, because it means that people can find these and report them to other people. It means that if someone does find a vulnerability, it'll be fixed in no time flat, because there are literally millions of people that can look at the source code and figure out what went wrong. I also think that knowing that that is an attack vector, that you don't have security by obscurity working in your favor or whatever, and the White House still, or not the White House, obviously the White House is, you know, website plumbing team or whatever, but, you know, someone in the government said, yeah, that's, we know about that, and open source is still the best way to go for security, is really a testament to the fact that I think open source is slowly getting into, you know, mainstream. I mean, in my opinion, it went mainstream a long time ago, but there's still a lot of FUD out there about, you know, closed versus open source. And something that's interesting about the Slate article is, you know, I'm pretty sure I tried Googling for that guy, and I'm pretty sure he works for Microsoft. So I thought that
That's a different guy. That's okay. A different. We don't want to cast aspersions on the other Chris Wilson.
I guess it's a fairly common name, but yeah. I don't know. It was just funny. Anyway, there's pros and cons to everything, but I honestly think that this, like, putting aside my patriotism for Drupal and all that, I think this is a really good, very highly visible example of open source being accepted into an area that where security is important. And I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's always strides, and Drupal is ever evolving. And so I think that this is yet another evolution that will sort of get incorporated in. And if there are security, I guess, how can I explain this? Like, when there were security problems and it was just running people's blogs, it wasn't so much of an issue. But now, as Drupal is getting used for more popular sites, more important sites, sites where security is more of an issue, I think Drupal's security will rise to the occasion as well. I think that we'll see, you know, people testing Drupal in different ways than they were before, and making sure that Drupal is malleable enough and secure enough to adapt to those situations. And so it really is this sort of evolutionary process, and it's exciting.
Yep.
So, all right. So let's talk about Drupal 7. So we're just kind of, we've got the Drupal 7 changelog here open in front of us. And for anybody else that wants to take a look at that, if you download Drupal 7, how would we even tell people to download Drupal 7?
Basically, if you click the download link on Drupal.org at the top of the page, like the tab, then there's a section there for Drupal right at the top. Just click that. Drupal project, I guess it's called. Mm-hmm. And then down below there, you'll see a 7.x-dev release, and you can just download that like you would any other version of anything.
Cool. And so when you download that in the root directory, once you expand it, there's a file called changelog.txt. And this file... Does it still show all of the changes ever since forever for every version of Drupal, or is it just for Drupal 7, this one now?
No, it's everything.
That's so awesome.
If you're curious about what we did back in Drupal 1.1 or something, I don't know, then you can look and find that out.
So we've got this file open in front of us, and we're not going to attempt to cover all of the changes in Drupal 7, because that would take even longer than these podcasts usually are, which is already really long. And I don't know. We're just going to sort of touch on some highlights and the stuff that we're particularly excited about, and hopefully other people can come and add comments on the podcast for things that they think we might have missed and pointed out for other people. But let's start with us. So first of all, Angie is the Drupal 7 co-maintainer. For each release of Drupal, there are two people who have core commit access, and one of them is Dries, and the other person is chosen by Dries. And for this version, it's Angie.
Woo!
And on in case you're trying to match up what you're hearing with what you're seeing on the internet, Angie is usually referred to as Webchick on Drupal.org. And so Angie has been very intimate with all of everything going into Drupal 7. So let's start with one of the others on the podcast here. Maybe we can talk to Karen. Karen, you're CCK is kind of your thing. And with this version of Drupal, we've gotten yet even more of CCK into core. You want to talk about?
We do. Actually, CCK has been kind of moving into core in the last couple of releases, bits and pieces. Custom content types was an early one that got into an older version of Drupal. And so now we in Drupal 7 are getting fields moved in. And that was the big thing, was getting fields in core. And we had a big code sprint last December to try and figure out how to do it. And we have a lot of the basic fields basically are in now in core as a part of core. So we've got, you know, text field and image field, or text field and number field, and the basic ones, and image field also. Nate would, I think we'll talk about that later, ultimately made it in. Body is now a field, instead of the old way of doing body. Now body is a regular field, which makes sense. Title is a field. Taxonomy is a field. All kinds of things now are fields in core, and it's cool for a lot of reasons. One is that you get that capability out of the box. You don't have to download another module to get it, which you've had to do in the past. But also, everybody else and all the other module developers can know that everybody has this available. So other modules can build on this safely, knowing that that everybody has that capability. So it's really exciting. We even got the UI got into core, which was debatable for a while, but it if you've used CCK in Drupal 6, what you see in Drupal 7 will look pretty familiar. It's very similar to the way that it's the way that it works in Drupal 6, but it's now core. So that's really exciting.
Wow.
That's exciting for you too, because now you don't have to maintain all that.
I was going to say, yeah. So does the CCK project not
exist?
No,
the CCK project is still going to exist. Actually, we've got some fields that didn't make it into core. We don't, field group did not get into core. Node reference and user reference did not get into core. So those are going to live in CCK. So CCK is going to live in Drupal 7 to pick up, you know, pieces of whatever else didn't get into core. The field permissions, I don't think, got into core. I'm not sure about that. I don't think it did. So there's bits and pieces that didn't make it into core, and CCK will still live as a module that will be a place where those things can be maintained. But the key fields are there.
Wow. So in core, it's called content module. Is that right?
Called field.
Called it's field, so it's just
fields. It's field,
and so there we start to get this focus change from this sort of node focus which Drupal has had in the past to fields, because you can kind of add fields onto anything. A node no longer has a title that's kind of its own thing, no longer has a body that it's its own thing. All of these things are fields, and you can add fields onto users.
Right.
You can add fields
onto... And that's a big one, fields on users.
You can add fields onto other things too, right? You can add fields onto taxonomy terms, which seems to blow everyone's mind. Like, no one has yet figured out the proper use case for that.
Well,
I totally have one.
The interesting thing is that what we did basically was say... anything can say, I am something that can accept fields. So it's basically built in a way that, you know, a contrib module could come in and create something and say, I can have fields on me. Anything can do that. And then if they do that, if they invoke the right hooks, they can have fields. So anything can have fields. Users can have fields. A bunch of core things can have fields. It's really interesting.
It is. It's really interesting. I mean, one of the things that attracted me to Drupal initially, I don't even know if it was attracted me to Drupal. It just made me realize that I needed a system that was more than just a blogging system was that I wanted to be able to add more fields onto the content I was creating. And I found Drupal and realized that I could do this through module building, and that was okay. And then I found FlexiNode and I thought, oh, this is great. And then I started using FlexiNode and I said, oh, this is not as great as I thought. And then CCK came along and I thought, this is it.
CCK, well, FlexiNode was like the first attempt, and then a lot of the lessons learned from FlexiNode went into CCK.
Yeah. And so now in core. I mean, it's really it's kind of a game changer.
It is. It's a very cool thing. And I think the thing that's interesting about CCK is early on in CCK, there was a big debate about, well, you know, obviously this is really great for non-developers, you know, easy way for non-developers to add fields. But developers wouldn't need this because developers, they can just go write their own, you know, right? We're developers. We don't need that wimpy UI stuff. But what has happened is developers have found that there are a lot of reasons why it's kind of nice for developers to use this too. And I think developers now, I would say, overwhelmingly are using it. So it's not just for end users that don't know how to program. It's for anybody.
It's for developers who don't know how to program. Yeah. Sort of an adjunct to that, Nate, one of your things has been file field and image field, which previously were CCK. They were add-on modules, which added fields to CCK. Is that right? In the past,
yeah, and just a really simple concept. You know, you just want to upload a file to your site, or you want to upload a picture to your site. And right now there's upload module in core. It's actually still there in Drupal 7, but it'll be gone by the time that Drupal 7 is released.
Thought you were going to say by the time the podcast goes up. Yeah.
No, yeah, the upload module is like you've kind of been saying, the old way of doing things versus a field-based system where you can now attach, say, like a file field to anything, like a user or taxonomy term or anything like that. And I think this is just sort of a pattern of Drupal 7 is getting in line with contrib. Like previously, Drupal core was doing one thing, and then Drupal contrib was doing something completely different with this whole CCK thing and all these fields. And I think that Drupal 7 was a whole lot of getting core back in line with contrib and sort of making it lead the way rather than kind of running along behind contrib like it has been doing for the Drupal 6 release. But the image field stuff I think is a real example of that sort of paradigm also, where it's a really basic capability. I want to be able to have a system, I download it, I can immediately upload a picture and then have it create a thumbnail for me. It sounds so simple, yet it's something that we've been striving for a couple of releases now of Drupal core. And finally now with Drupal 7, the time was right, because with CCK in core, it finally opened up the floodgates and basically said, okay, now we have the base system that we've always needed. Because what we didn't want to do was put in the old system, like polish upload module, when everyone was moving away from upload module anyway. We wanted this field-based system. And so finally, with CCK in there, the time was right to actually start converting other things to this field-based system, including upload module, moving to file field, and then adding image field on top of that, making it so that you can upload a picture. And then image cache and image API also both moved into core.
Explain
the system.
What those are?
Oh, yeah. Those are the systems that basically make it so you can do dynamic image manipulation. So you can say things like, I want to make a preset. Drupal core comes with three of them. It comes with thumbnail, medium, and large by default. But you can make any number of presets. And then say on your site, I want, when the image is displayed as a profile picture, I want that shown as a grayscale square cropped thumbnail. at 150 pixels square. And you can chain together all these nice, awesome commands. It's extensible, so other modules can come in and say, I want to make a style that has rounded corners and drop shadows, for example. And then that'll apply site-wide anywhere that that image style is put into use. So a really, really powerful new media handling capabilities for Drupal Core. And I think the greatest thing about it is, the capabilities it has is great, but we've already had those capabilities. Unfortunately, you needed to download 5 to 7 modules in order to get those capabilities.
One of them was called Image Cache.
Yeah, one of them was called Image Cache, which is completely ambiguous, and Image API, which you probably only downloaded because Image Cache told you to get it, and then the dependency for Image API, oh gosh, it was just a mess. Now, download Drupal, upload stuff, see your awesome new thumbnails and things you can create now.
Ta-da!
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff, yeah, it was tricky to put together. We created videos just to explain to people how to put this, how to, you know, which modules to choose and how to configure them. I mean, it's still complex to understand how to put it together, but it will become a more common knowledge because it's the stuff that's part of Core now.
Yeah, I think it'll really reduce the what now feeling when you download Drupal Core. Because when you download Drupal Core, you're like, this is it? This is the system? And now there's so much more that you can do right out of the box. You really get the feeling of Drupal's power immediately, as opposed to needing to go to Drupal.org and then finding out, oh, there's all this other stuff, and then trying them all out and blowing up your site.
So we have views in Core now?
No.
So you still kind of need... Still kind of need to download some stuff.
Okay, yeah, that was a trick question, Jeff.
Well, yeah, and so, we still have, like, node reference, which is a widely used field, is not in Core. So we've got some pieces that are not, but at least the core functionality is there.
Yeah,
well, I think what'll happen Drupal is... Drupal does something out of the box is pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I think that it'll be more like you'll feel like it's all powerful and you'll get all this feeling immediately, but then you'll run into certain tasks like how do I make a listing of stuff.
Yeah,
that will make it pretty clear that you'll need to go and grab something else, I guess.
So it seems like the whole file handling system has been overhauled. We no longer have upload module. We have image field. So there's images as a field, but should we touch on the other ways that sort of file handling has been changed in Drupal Core as well?
Yeah, I'll say something about that really quick, just because there's been some tremendous efforts that have made all kinds of really awesome capabilities possible, things that couldn't have even possibly happened in Contrib because it's a fundamental shift in the way Drupal works. And one of those things was Drupal's conversion to stream wrappers, which is a PHP term. It's not a Drupal term that we made up. But stream wrappers basically means a way of referencing files by protocol. So you could say common protocols are things like FTP :// you know, or HTTP :// and stream wrappers is a way of referring to files by their protocol. So you could do things like Flickr :// to refer to Flickr images, or S3 to refer to Amazon S3, and all kinds of protocols that may or may not exist. They're completely arbitrary how you want to handle them. But the use case for this in Drupal, the media folks have all kinds of crazy plans that they're going to use this new capability. But the practical example is that in Drupal Core, we have three built-in stream wrappers. There is the temporary, so you can say temporary :// but the big one is there's now public :// and private :// which that refers to the private file system or the public file system, and you can use both of them at the same time. In Drupal 6, you had to when you initially build your site, where you're faced with this big decision: am I going to use private files or public files? And pretty much, unless you absolutely needed it, you were using public files. Private files were useful on sites where you need to make it so that it's really important that people don't have access to this specific file if they don't have access to the node that it was attached to. And in Drupal 6, you had to do that. You had to turn on for the entire site, which was really annoying because it made it so you couldn't do things like turn on the CSS and JavaScript aggregator, which was a pretty, as if private files weren't a penalty hit enough by themselves, now you can't turn on the aggregator, and then you're just getting yourself into a giant swamp hole of performance problems. But now, with a file field in core, when you create a new file field, you get to choose, hey, is this public or is this private? Even crazier than that, because file field just supports the entire gamut of stream wrappers, it just so happens that public and private are the ones that core comes with. You could do something like get a module that does like S3, and then you could create a file field and say, this file field stores its stuff in S3. And it would actually upload to Drupal, and then Drupal would handle it through its stream wrapper interface, what it meant when you said, save this file to this URI, they like to say. So you would say URI S3:// myfile.jpg, and that would actually, you'd probably have some kind of setup that would authenticate you on S3 and then move that file over to S3, and then everywhere that file was referred to, it would actually be shipping directly from some external source.
So it would upload to Drupal locally and then start serving that file out from the local Drupal until it had uploaded and sort of verified that it was on S3, and then start redirecting people to S3.
Yeah, it's completely arbitrary, like how you determine what any URI goes to. Like you could make a URI for stuff stored in memory, for example, that wasn't even on disk, or a URI for Flickr or YouTube, or and you determine as the module implementer that puts this together, you got to determine what that means when people refer to a certain URI.
Wow. Huh.
That's pretty badass.
That's pretty cool.
The thing I'm the most excited about is that you can use both private and public files at the same time, because in Drupal 6, as you were mentioning, you only pick one or the other. And the other thing was you could never switch it, because if you ever switched it, all your file paths would change and it'd all break. And anyway, it's just like, yeah, really, really good. Drupal 7, in addition to being the release where we caught up with Contrib, I think it's also like the release where we just fixed a bunch of really stupid crap that should always have been fixed. And, you know, like,
this has been bothering me for years.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Goodness, a bunch of database changes, right? Anybody want to touch on those? Angie?
Yeah, I can talk about those. Although, if we're doing stuff that we personally worked on, I had a couple of things. Like, believe it or not, I actually worked on stuff this release.
I didn't think you did anything on this release.
Well, for the most part, I didn't. I just sat around and waited for awesome stuff to happen, and I'm just like, okay, we'll do that one and that one and that one. But no, like back in February of last year, I went to I was at a usability testing thing at University of Minnesota, and that was like the first sort of formal lab testing that we ever had with Drupal's usability, and kind of got to see firsthand people just struggling with Drupal and trying to figure it out, and not like just people off the street randomly, you know, who in their spare time like to collect bottle cans or something, but it was like actually like people who had previous experience with things like movable type and WordPress, and you know, people basically directly in our target audience, like people who had used CMSs before, people who knew how to build a website in, you know, say with Dreamweaver or something like that, and then trying to come over to Drupal and just bashing their faces against the wall. So, you know, something that I made kind of a big focus of my, you know, energies in Drupal was improving its usability. And there's a whole bunch of changes related to usability that got into core. Everything from sort of, you know, more basic sort of user interface improvements. Like, for example, we take all the big sea of collapsed field sets on, say, the node add form, and make them into this nice vertical tabs construct, it not only compresses it visually, but it also gives you a snapshot before you even click on the thing to show you what is actually there.
It's a little summary, yeah. For people that...
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things that's sort of hard to describe, this vertical tabs, but as soon as you see it, you'll go, ah, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So check it out.
Totally. And there was also, a lot of other things, fixing obvious problems, like we fixed the admin password checker thing so that it wasn't, like, screaming their face off at people if they missed a lowercase character in their password or something. It would, instead it shows a little bar from, bad to good and goes on like that. So we did a lot of, like, sort of minor improvements like that. And then there was a whole D7 UX project also. And D7 UX or D7 Drupal 7 User Experience project was a project by Mark Bolton and Lisa Reichelt, who were hired by Acquia to sort of take a look at this overarching usability, sort of mental mismatches that people were having with Drupal itself. And so a lot of huge changes came out of that. We have a redesigned IA now, so all the links in the admin panel are laid out in a different way. To facilitate sort of drilling down automatically to where you need to go. We also have a toolbar and a little shortcut bar. So the toolbar is like sort of the top level admin items. Then below that, you can basically set up your own customized shortcuts on either a per user or per role basis. So if you want, as an admin, you want your list of, I need to clear the cache all the time and I need to, enable and disable modules. You can set shortcuts for that, which is really nice. We also got in a change with the edit anywhere. So now if you hover over different things like a block and a node and a comment, you'll get little edit configure links, which a lot of contrib modules and themes and stuff had implemented in a bunch of different ways, but now that's all in core.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really appreciate, because recently, like, I had views module, admin module, and the Zen theme all on the same site, and all three of those want to put little edit links on your views for you, and oh gosh, it was just so... you'd roll over and there'd be edit links that would pop up everywhere, and oh gosh. So I'm glad there's a consistent way of handling that now.
Totally, totally. Just some other stuff. We have this little dashboard in core now. So like when you go to the dashboard, there's little drag and droppy block things. The dashboard itself is, it's a core feature, and we tend to do slim down features in core. So it's not like, the whiz-bangy panels replacement or anything, but one thing it will do is sort of, or we hope, will sort of get module developers to think about how they can take the information that their modules are managing and expose that to admins in useful ways. So, exposing their own dashboard blocks for administrators and stuff like that. I think that'll be a big improvement. And then the last bit of that to go in is what's called overlays. And what overlays are is basically when you click the edit link on a node or whatever, a nice black screen comes up and you get the admin interface right in
overlays.
An overlay, if you will. So, and the other thing that goes along with that is we have an admin theme that comes in core now. So there is a front end back end separation between Drupal, and that was the other really terrible conceptual problem that people had, is never knowing where they were on the site, never knowing, do my users see this or do I only see this? And I think that all of these changes together will really help to address these fundamental usability issues in a big way. And then the other thing that I was really passionate about this release is in Drupal 6, I spent about, 6 months of my life, like, downloading a patch and then, like, clicking around to make sure nothing broke and then, like, posting back, okay, nothing broke, I guess this is okay, And, got carpal tunnel, and it was a horrible, horrible situation. So another awesome thing that went into Drupal 7 is a testing framework that does all this kind of stuff just automated. So we have a testing framework based off SimpleTest that will basically take actions like clicking around on forms and doing this kind of stuff and automated in code. And then we have an automated testing bot at testing.drupal.org that takes every single Drupal 7 patch in the queue and runs it against this battery of tests. So as a patch developer, instantly when, head changed too much and your code is out of date, so you'll get a notification that it needs work. And as a patch reviewer, anything that actually says it needs review, at least doesn't break anything that used to work. So you can focus instead on just like reading through the code and making sure that it's solid and stuff like that. And I think that change has been dramatic for our project because it allows us not only to sort of refactor things at, you know, wildly, because we'll always know that, okay, well, at least you can still add a node, you know, stuff like that. But also to really just make it so much easier to make big changes in core, you know, like the whole file handling system and like, you know, all this other stuff and do it in such a way that it, you know, we make sure we keep the baseline of things working. So I think that, Drupal 7, there was a lot of time spent getting this into place. I think in Drupal 8, it will really empower the developers there to just go bananas and make whatever improvements are necessary in a very short period of time.
Yeah, so lots of usability changes, and generally really good stuff. I think that there's always sort of a fair amount of sort of settling out and shifting around as these things go in. It may be a little bit for people who are kind of old school Drupal people, some of these changes may be a little bit surprising, if not jarring at first. Hopefully, I don't know. I can't tell yet whether for myself, like whether I'm still sort of settling in with them to get used to them. It's interesting to see, like I said, this evolutionary process of Drupal is really fascinating.
Yeah. The good news is that, I mean, everything that I just talked about is all disableable and, you know, whatever, if you want to stick with the old school stuff. And in fact, we ship core now with two installation profiles, default, which enables all the bling, and a minimal one, which is just straight up ordinary out of the box Drupal with not even any content types created or anything. So, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk of the small core movement and stuff, and I think that separation, basically what we've shipped with is two installation profiles. One is Drupal the CMS, and one is Drupal the framework. And so I think that you know, has started, you know, I think that will enable people to, you know, think about Drupal in those two terms and also accommodate both ends of the spectrum that we need to accommodate in Drupal.
Sure. What else should we talk about? We have a section here called performance, and there's been some talk in the blogosphere about Drupal 7 performance advantages and disadvantages. Should we talk a little bit about performance changes in Drupal 7? I'll start by saying the general thing that people say about it, even Dries, is that it's slower.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more flexible, so it doesn't need to be slower. You want to touch on that?
Well, no, we want to make it faster. And in fact, there's a lot of work going on right now, particularly by Nat Catchpole from Catch on Drupal.org, and he's been doing a lot of work trying to do profiling on Drupal and determine where the bottlenecks are and stuff like that. It's interesting because a lot of these features that we're talking about, field API and other things like that, they've made Drupal slower, but then we've also got a lot of new constructs to help offset that sort of stuff. For example, we have all these functions to load multiple nodes at the same time as opposed to doing, you know, one node load at a time.
Hmm.
Which is great because, you know, normally a front page Drupal, you know, site with 10 nodes on it would be 10 node loads, which means, you know, for each one of those, you're firing off maybe, I don't know, a dozen queries or something like that. But node load multiple will take an array of the node IDs you want to load and then pop them all up at the same time. So you only get the big database hit once instead of 10 times. So we've done stuff like that. We've added a hook file alter hook so that it's possible to serve files from a content delivery network as opposed to hitting the database for file locations and stuff like that. We've done a lot of work optimizing a lot of the queries that used to run a lot on every page, like the past queries and stuff. We've got sort of this lookup system that I don't really remember how it works. But basically, if you're showing a link to, you know, user/1 on every single page, it will look up the path alias for that and cache it, so that you don't have every single page doing, you know, select a path from URL alias where, blah, 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 and stuff. which is expensive in previous versions of Drupal. We have support for HTTP proxies. We have this sort of class registry thing in the database and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that we've done to help make Drupal faster, have less database traffic, and all this kind of stuff. But the bottom line is we still need to do work optimizing because it's still slower than we'd like it to be. And if you want to help out with that, then please do. It's the performance tag. Yeah.
And it's not and it's not done yet.
So it's not done.
As of the recording of this podcast, it's slower than people would like it to be. And this is more a thing that we're talking about as people are working on it. So it's getting faster. What do we have any idea where the bottlenecks are coming from, the slowness of Drupal 7?
Kesh thinks the database layer was a lot of it. And another thing that was a major change in Drupal 7 is if Eaton was here, he'd be saying renderables. The entire page of the website is now alterable. So instead of just a form being alterable or a user profile or something like that, now everything on the whole entire page is alterable. So you get this big array of everything on the page. I have a strong feeling that slowed things down as well. But so it's a trade-off in flexibility versus raw performance. And again, our goal is to make sure that Drupal 7 isn't painfully slow out of the box. It's not painfully slow, but we do have some optimization points we need to hit, especially on functions that are called a lot on every single page. We're currently working on micro-optimizations for those to help speed those up.
And this is the same stuff that you see with new operating systems that come out with, mm-hmm. the new version of Windows or the Mac operating system or, that they do more. They're more flexible, but maybe a little bit slower. And sometimes that's offset by computer speeds getting faster. I think when people are comparing Drupal 6 to Drupal 7, they're comparing it, running on the same machine, sort of ignoring the fact that Drupal 6 was released, 2 years ago, and Drupal 7 will be running for 2 years on the machines 2 years from now. So there's that aspect too. I mean, it still would be nice to be sure that it was as fast as possible, but.
Yeah, well, one thing to keep in mind is that the way that our release cycles go is we have a code thaw period, or we just go bananas and put stuff, whatever we can get in there. And then we have sort of this API cleanup phase, which just finished 2 weeks ago. And so it's only now that we're really focusing on sort of the performance optimizations and stuff like that. So I'm optimistic that a lot of work is going to get done over the next 2 to 4 weeks, and we'll see, some good improvements there. Every little bit helps. So if you think the stuff we're talking about in Drupal 7 sounds awesome and you want to use it and you don't want it to be slow, then please help.
Go download it. Test it out. Start submitting patches or contributing to patches. Actually, while we're talking about patches, let's talk about this question that always comes up, which is, when will Drupal 7 come out?
Right. So the official answer on that is when it's done is when Drupal 7 comes out.
How do we know when it's done?
And the way you know it's done is if you enable on your Drupal.org user profile, there's a block called contributor links, which contains a list of various queues, such as there are 403 critical issues in Drupal 7 right now.
It looks like contributor links is enabled for anonymous users as well.
Oh, excellent. So. That's great. So yeah, on the right-hand side of Drupal.org, for now, till they change it, there's a block called contributor links, and then in that list of such and such patches to do this, there's 403 critical issues for Drupal 7 as of this podcast. When that number gets to zero, that's when we ship. And we'll start really hammering on that queue, I would say, after we call a UX freeze, which will be coming up in a few weeks here. So once we call that, then that basically all of the focus for Drupal 7 shifts to just hammering down that queue and getting it down to zero. And then once it gets down to zero, then we ship. So it's an interesting balance because the people who want Drupal 7 to come out later will test it and find more critical bugs in order to put them in the issue queue. And the people who want it to come out faster will work on the critical bugs and get them cleaned up. So it's a nice, perfect storm of people working in their self-interests, and then it works together to make an awesome Drupal release. So, yeah. looking forward to that.
That's funny. Let's talk about the new theme system for themers out there. The theme system has changed a little bit, but there's also just some changes with themes in Drupal 7. My favorite one is not what's in there, but what's not in there.
Those ugly themes are gone.
Yay!
So no more chameleon, no more Marvin. What's that one? And
Bloomer. Push button.
Yeah.
They were cutting edge at the time, but now
in 1998 or something.
unfortunately, they did give people who are new to Drupal a really bad first impression, because here they are in core, which sort of implies that this was the best we could do, which is sad.
Yeah. But now there's less themes and more, like, well, we've got this new theme called Stark, which is a non-theme, basically, right? It's like Drupal's raw output with a tiny, tiny little bit of CSS to sort of lay things out in columns, basically. It's a good way for developers to see what their module or what Drupal core is kind of outputting on its own. And it's also, I guess, for theme developers, a good place to kind of start.
We got a lot of feedback that you know, themers wouldn't have any aware where to begin making their own theme and not having to download one, because, you know, designers, they like to make things their own and stuff. So by including Stark in core, it's basically a way to show designers, like, here, this is what you have to work with, and then they can just go to town with CSS changes and lay that out however they want. Underlying Stark, we also got a lot of the Zen theme into core as well. So a lot of the markup that makes the Zen theme really powerful and popular got into core. So that's the basis for themers to work from.
There's a new admin theme we mentioned earlier called 7, aptly named because it's the new theme for Drupal 7. And it's pretty slick. So Development Seed has put out a module called admin, drupal.org/project/admin, which in my understanding is basically, the 7 theme for Drupal 6. Is that right? And it does some other stuff too. It does some other administrative kind of stuff that makes it a little bit easier to administrate Drupal. And, I had turned that on one site we were working on, and the problem I had was that the back end looked so much better than the front end. Like, the administrative area looked so much better than the front of the site that it was like, oh, man. So
the admin theme is actually kind of an interesting way of sort of phasing your way into Drupal 7, because it has some of the same kinds of things that Drupal 7 has, the administration bar across the top, and if you look at that module, if you install that module and look at it and then look at Drupal 7, you'll see a lot of similarities. It's not exactly the same, but
they're actually quite different, actually. I mean, other than the basic, you know, dark...
Just the basic concept, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it started as like an implementation of D7 UX, and then it just sort of went off into a...
Yeah, it went one way and D7 went
a panel thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. But no, it's cool, you know, because it's useful on Drupal 6 right now. But yeah, they're not really the same.
Yeah. Another backport of something in Drupal 7 is vertical tabs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can download the vertical tabs module and get some vertical tabs stuff in Drupal 6, which is also interesting.
Cool. And then a whole bunch of like theme level changes. You can. There's page alter, but that's not really a theme thing.
As of like Wednesday or something, it is. So one of the very last patches to make it in was to allow themes access to alter hooks, which is both terrifying, but also exciting if you're a themer, because in the past, if you wanted to do something like, I don't know, reorder the fields on a form or change the button name or something. You had to go into module land and implement hook form alter just to do some cosmetic changes on the site. So now themes actually have access to that alter layer as well, so they can do page alter, form alter, menu alter, potentially hook elements alter, like that. But like, we're really hoping people to please don't do evil things with this. Please don't make me regret my life.
Well, it just adds another layer of why is this not doing what I thought it would be doing?
Right.
Another, you know, if you've got a theme that decides to alter your forms, and alter like where your forms submit to or something like that, and you're like, why is this form no longer working like it used to? And it turns out that it's actually the presentational layer is changing your functionality. That's
so a good rule of thumb when debugging Drupal 7 will be to switch to Garland and see if it still does that. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I was very conflicted about it, but I looked through the code we wrote for Buzzer. You know, like we have this module in Buzzer that's like the big alter everything module that basically undoes everything that Drupal does. And when I looked through that, it was like the vast majority of that was just very minor cosmetic changes that really did belong more in a theme than in a module. So anyway. There was a lot of very heated opinions about it, and, you know, I don't know if Dries knows I committed that yet, so maybe that'll get rolled back.
Don't tell him. No one listens to this podcast, so we should be fine.
Anyway, yeah. And then some other things, too, like you can pre-process theme functions now instead of just template files, which is another really confusing thing to always explain to people in theming workshops, you know, like, yeah, this great pre-process thing, and if it's a theme function, you can't use it. So we, you know, worked through all that. There's a bunch of really nice, but a lot of it is just like extra features for the theme system. We really didn't make any major fundamental changes to the theme system at all, which is good. That means the work we did in Drupal 6 was solid. So, yay.
How about any other sort of big sweeping changes? We talked about themes being removed from the Drupal core distribution. What else? There's some new stuff around CCK, or what we used to call CCK. other modules that have been removed from Drupal core?
None that you would notice, really.
None that you're actually using.
Yeah. Well, we removed a throttle module, which is one of those things that people thought they turned it on. They're like, wow, this is great. But in practice, throttle module was not, it's not a very good idea. I mean, the concept was if your site's under a heavy load, then it will disable features that require a lot of processing. It was just sort of a funny system.
It was a little weird, kind of didn't work. And then there was that whole thing of trying to figure out the threshold level of how busy the site was, and you sort of set it at some like average. On an average day, you set the throttle, and you never quite knew. Yeah, it was very weird. But I have to say, when I first found Drupal, I was like, ooh, this looks really powerful. Like, Drupal's really designed for powerful sites. But in reality, it didn't work. That was our last podcast. What do we call it? Flub ups, mess up, screw ups. We had some really great comments from people, and it was interesting to, at least one person was commenting about their like big great realizations, like this is the greatest thing ever, and then realizing like a couple months later, no, it's not. It's a false god. Run away, you know. And I think that there are a lot of those kind of things in Drupal where like FlexiNode, this is the greatest thing ever, but oh no, it's not. And throttle module was sort of one of those things.
Yeah, and then ping module was removed. And quite honestly, I can't even tell you what that one did.
it pinged one site, a site that was supposed to be a ping aggregator site. What did it ping? It was like Ping-O-Matic, I think. And let you know that you'd put it, let that site know that you'd put new content on your site, and that site was in turn supposed to let other sites like, I don't know, Google and Yahoo and other things know, like, hey, there's new content here, come and get it. But yeah, it really was very, very not flexible. And the truth is that Google with its just omniscience. It just knew. It knows already. Google knows whatever happens on the internet. You don't need to ping it.
Yeah, but the most controversial one is Blog API was also removed. And that one, some people were actually using. And it was one of those things where it was convenient to have installed in Drupal Core directly, because a lot of systems, basically, Blog API made it so you could have like a desktop application that you would launch the desktop application. It would give you a nice rich text editor and you could type in things there. And then you could hit post and it would communicate with your Drupal site and actually work. And a lot of software that provided these kind of services, it was nice looking at the instructions, because it was like, okay, turn on Blog API module. You already have it. If you have Drupal, you have Blog API, and then enter in these settings. But in truth, I mean, how many people actually use desktop software to publish stuff to their Drupal websites? I think that we were hitting like maybe, you know, like a 2% or something like that of people that was convenient for. And for everybody else, they're just like, what is this thing?
Well, and it worked well when you were using Drupal as a blog. But mm-hmm. once you started adding extra CCK fields and creating different content types and stuff like that, it was a module that just wasn't as flexible as Drupal is.
Yeah, and it's something that I think will actually be really good for the Blog API module in the long run, because if it gets moved to contrib, that means that there'll be more freedom to improve it quickly. And so it can catch up with all of the new software that's come out since Blog API was originally written, which was like 3 years ago. It hasn't had any real updates. So I think in contrib, it'll have a better life there anyway.
Yep, I agree with that.
Cool. I'm trying to think of what else we should touch on here.
I worked a little bit on the translation system changes. There's a couple things we might mention.
Let's do it.
One is translatable fields for field API. So this is kind of related to getting the fields in core. Then we want to have a way that you can have translated versions of your field data. And that was kind of an interesting project, because some fields need translation and some fields don't need translation. You don't need to translate numbers, but if you've got text, you want to have the ability to have translations. So that was kind of interesting, figuring out how to work that in, because that was not in Drupal 6. We didn't have the ability to do that in Drupal 6, so a new system had to be created to make that happen. And so that is in, and you can have translated versions of your fields. And then another thing that was really interesting, and this seems like a small thing, but it was actually kind of a big thing for translators, is we have the ability to give context to translations. So it used to be we have, you do the T translate thing, and if you're translating the word view, for instance, I mean, view could be a view that you're looking at, or it could be the verb view, and translators were tearing their hair out, because you need a different translation depending on the context in which that's used. And so now we have a system where you can give your translations context, so that the translators can say, oh, okay, we're talking about this thing, the verb, and therefore I need to have this translation. So those are going to be really nice for multilingual sites.
Interesting. Yeah, we don't talk about that stuff as much on this podcast as we probably should. What with us being English speakers and Drupal being in English, but for the rest of the world, that's important.
Yeah.
Even for Angie up there in Montreal.
Pardon?
Yeah. Even Angie. Another thing that I worked on was some date changes, which, you know, that's another one of those, why weren't we doing this a long time ago? Drupal up until now, we have this thing called a time zone field, but it's not a time zone. It's a time zone offset. And then on daylight savings time, you had to go change it because it wasn't right anymore. And it was just, you know, totally crazy that Core didn't have a way of knowing anything about time zones. So we've got time zone support into Drupal 7, finally, yay.
Hooray!
Yeah, you know, we have it in the date module in Drupal 6, but now you don't have to get another module for that to work. And it was a huge problem for the date module because anybody that wanted to do time zone support had to figure out their own way of doing it because Core wasn't doing it. And so we stepped on each other a lot of times. And another thing that's new, which is probably a little hard to explain but cool, is we have a new way of doing date formats. So you can create, so for instance, if you have a site, there might be places where you want to have one format in France for the way that you display a date and a different format in America. And so now you have the ability to create formats in, and actually any number of formats. So you, if you want to create a format, Drupal's formats all have seconds, and I don't always want seconds. Sometimes I just want to see the year and the month and the day. And now you can create a format that has no seconds and use it, and it's a core format. And so that's going to be a lot more flexible. So those are a couple things I was excited about.
Yeah, that's one of those improvements where you get to it and you're just like, oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, this is good. Because yeah, the ability to have like a month, day, year with the time and a month, day, year without the time, that was something like previously you got short, medium, and long, or short, medium, large. I can't remember what the actual words were, but you only got three, and now you can say you can set up a medium with time and a medium without time. Just makes so much more sense. It's yeah, a great improvement.
Yeah, totally. Two other things just before we finish up here. The database layer, we didn't actually talk about that because I skipped over it, but everything that ever sucked about the database layer is fixed now. So we've got it all object-oriented. We've got it so it can support master-slave replication and transactions and all these other crazy features and stuff like that. So database layer is much better. And also RDF support got into core as well. So basically, Drupal outputs RDFA markup, and fields are marked up with the stuff that you need in order to interact with that. So Drupal will now become a means of sort of propagating the semantic web, which is big for people who are into that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Another sort of minor one is there was a module called Poor Man's Cron. That got into core. A lot of people were using that when it was difficult or impossible for them to set up a cron run to hit their cron.php on their site. And this basically just ran it periodically. It was like when a user hit the site and it bootstrapped Drupal, during Drupal's exit process, it would say, hey, when was the last time I ran cron? And if it had been, you know, over an hour or something like that, it'd say, oh, okay, I'm going to run it now. And it would run it during the exit cycle after it had already delivered the page. So it wouldn't even slow down the page delivery. And that's part of core now. There's also, I don't know if this is an option or if this is a required thing, but there's a code that you can append to the cron URL that will... It's sort of a key to run the cron, because in the past, anyone could hit anyone's cron script on a Drupal site, and it would run the cron process. And sometimes that was particularly problematic. I had a website once where I had a development version somewhere else. There was the main site, the production site, and then I had the development server. And the production site would periodically send out emails to people, you know, about various things that were happening. And if you ran the cron on the development site, it would send out all of the emails that it hadn't sent out since cron had not run in 6 months. And so you really wanted to not run the cron on that site. But there it was, and anyone could kind of hit it if they wanted to sort of mess with me and send out 6,000 emails. But now you can put a key on it, so it won't actually run it unless you want it to be run. So stuff like that. Just little nice things. Little nice things.
One more little nice thing. I mean, this is kind of a little thing, but kind of not, is we have an automatic administrator role created now. Yes. And that was... for me, that was always one of the big nightmare. I mean, the first thing I ever did with a site was to create an administrator role. But mm-hmm. no contrib module could ever know whether or not you had an administrator role. And now you can know that it's there, and it's automatically created.
Yep.
And it automatically keeps the checkboxes checked, which is nice. So you don't, you know, like set up your admin role once and then install a few more modules and then be like, you know. So.
There's a module for Drupal 6 called admin role that is nice for that. But now it's part of core. So, well, let's sort of wrap it up. I mean, there are definitely more changes. There's some really cool stuff around security with the Drupal site. We mentioned really briefly database changes that brings a whole lot of flexibility, stuff like that. And at Do It With Drupal in December, Angie will be doing a Drupal 7 presentation and talking about all the new stuff in Drupal 7, complete with pictures and boxes and arrows and hand waving. Lots of hand waving. Always lots of
lots of hand waving. Don't ever stand near me when I'm giving a presentation.
and likewise, Karen will be talking about CCK. And I think we have you down for date and calendar stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm doing some event handling stuff too. Yeah.
So that's also we didn't get that kind of date handling in core, but
no
calendars and dates and events and stuff like that is always good stuff to know about. So, yeah. And then Nate, you're going to be talking about jQuery, and we're all going to be helping out with a lot of the other presentations and jumping in where we can. So, again, doitwithdrupal.com is where you can find out more information about Do With Drupal. Anybody have anything else to add about Drupal 7 or anything?
jQuery UI was added to core.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big thing. It's a funny thing because, you just mentioned the jQuery class to Do With Drupal, and I was like, oh yeah, there's that. it's something that's completely underutilized right now. But the big thing is that since it's there, contributed modules can all depend on it without needing to require a module. Like right now, you need to download jQuery update and then jQuery UI modules to get any kind of UI functionality. So that's things like drag and drop, like I want to move, I want to drag stuff around the page, or things like a progress bar or a date picker. All of these great things that are in jQuery UI are now accessible to all of Drupal without any additional modules. I'm sure that we'll get a lot more core implementations of stuff in there before Drupal 7 is actually released. But I think the real excitement is just the fact that it's there for you now, and you can depend on an exact version being there for you when you're developing and contrib.
We're going to see more whiz-bangy interfaces, dragging and dropping and throwing things around and things jumping up and down on the page. Popping out at your 3D.
And explodes and
I'm looking forward to it. So cool. All right. Well, there you go. We've got that's a podcast. The next podcast will be number 80. We'll have to do something special for number 80. I don't know what we'll do. We'll come up with something, I'm sure. But thanks everybody for sticking it out to the end, and thanks for y'all for coming on the podcast and talking about Drupal 7. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.